in the House Committee on Rural Communities Land Use and Water. Colleagues, we've got two bills to do public hearing on today, but we have three work sessions that we're going to take care of while we've got our quorum. One of our members has an exciting bill signing to go to, and so we're going to do our work sessions now. Let me open one first on Senate Bill 261. This is the ballast water bill that we heard about the other day.
Okay. Chair Clem, I move that Senate Bill 261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves Senate Bill 261 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Gilliam.
It's a ballast water.
261.
Sorry, we surprised him. You want to reverse the order of the roll for this one? Give him a minute.
Chair Clem.
Aye.
Vice Chair Post.
I'm okay. Aye.
Vice Chair Helm.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Excuse.
Representative Gomberg.
Aye.
Representative Gilliam.
Can we recess?
Yeah, we need.
Aye.
Motion passes. The bill sent to the floor. Who's? Let's see. Who's got the most ballast water coming into their districts on this committee? I think Representative Gomberg might be the carrier for this.
I think I do.
I'm the ballast water guy.
Maybe Brad?
It's a tie.
We can co-carry.
Oh, no.
We'll have Representative Gomberg.
I'm just setting the record straight.
Okay, let me open a work session on Senate Bill 548. This is the one we heard about the other day regarding the tribes and giving counties the ability to move land to tribes if they choose to.
Chair Clem, I move Senate Bill 548 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Post moves Senate Bill 548 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? If not, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Gomberg?
Aye.
Representative McLean?
Excused.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Vice Chair Helm?
Aye.
Vice Chair Post?
Aye.
Chair Clem?
Aye. Motion passes and the bill sent to the floor. Who would be Representative Witt? Who's your counterpart in Senator Johnson's district? Is it Boone?
Yes.
Do you think this is more that part of the district?
I think probably, yes.
So we'll let Representative Boone carry it.
I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
He's not here to defend.
Exactly.
Himself.
Exactly. Okay. And then this Senate Bill 267A. You know, I think we're going to hold this over one more time. I've got a question that just occurred to me at the last second, but I don't want to take our time right now to deal with it. Let me see whose bill this is. I think it's Water Resources bill. So we're just going to carry over the work session on Senate Bill 267A.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, I just wanted to explain my no vote on 548.
But you didn't vote no.
I was just kidding. Oh. Senator Johnson was in the room.
She just left.
good timing there, Ace. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's open our public hearing on this one. Will be a little shorter to get through. So let's open our public hearing on Senate Bill 320 and ask Senator Roblin and Senator Hansel to join us. Welcome. What we got here?
So, Representative Clem and the rest of the committee, for the record, my name is Arne Roblin, Senator from Senate District 5, Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay, and over to Sheridan and Falls City. We're here about a bill which makes a lot of sense economically for rural areas and for new businesses that want to get started. And it basically allows for homemade products, as I'll let our good senator explain. We have some in front of you here, to be sold. And we had a lot of hearing in the House about this one, made sure that issues that came up, like making sure that there's a good labeling system for it so that people who have allergies and others can read the ingredients and know what's in the products that are being sold, but really sets up this home baking issues. We also checked with health departments and others to make sure that the kinds of things we're baking are more likely not to have any problems. There have never really been problems. From a high school perspective, this is what our school did a lot of times to try to raise money. We bake these goods. We talk to people what kind of baked goods we could sell at our school to raise money for opportunities. And it's the same kind of thing, except it's saying, let's let some little businesses start, some entrepreneurs in our rural areas and other places that can sell at places like Saturday markets and other kinds of things. And we protect the citizens. We give the good information. And if they have any product left over that they aren't going to save, maybe they can give it to the food bank. So it's a way of communities helping themselves and giving a little of a help to those people at the beginning without having to go through the licensing procedures and all that kind of stuff to be a small business entrepreneur. So I encourage your support.
Thank you, Chairman Clem, and members of the committee. This is, as my co-sponsor on the bill stated, it's a good bill for rural Oregon. Senate Bill 320 offers a low-risk, scale-appropriate regulation to enable aspiring small business food entrepreneurs the opportunity to meet the unmet demand for baked goods and confections in communities throughout Oregon.
Senator, I need to just have you identify yourself for the record. Sorry.
And I had that down. I didn't read it. For the record, Senator Bill Hansel from District 29 in Eastern Oregon.
Great.
But it allows for baked goods and confections in communities throughout Oregon. Under this bill, sellers of low-production baked goods sold directly to consumers would not be required to have some of the food processing licenses and the other things that larger bakers have to do. And I brought along a sample of the kind of things that we're talking about here under this bill. Sometimes it's difficult in rural Oregon to find fresh baked goods in the community. This bill would allow individuals, for example, at farmers markets, to sell their baked goods in the community through direct sales to fellow community members. Senate Bill 320 will stimulate the economy by providing entrepreneurial and micro-enterprise opportunities by allowing Oregonians who are on fixed and small incomes the ability to earn a little more. Please help citizens of rural Oregon, rural Oregon, and Oregonians across the state who are interested in starting a small business the opportunity to expand a passion into a business. I would urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 320 and be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Right. Any questions for our colleagues? No, seeing none. You've dazzled us.
Anybody want a biscuit?
Or switch over to.
Should we pass the biscuits around? He wanted to know.
Anybody want a biscuit? Or is that after lunch?
Does that fall under the $50 thing?
It depends. If it's, you know, made with a boutique-y kind of name in Southeast Portland, it's probably more than $50.
I actually think Hansel did it himself. So
you may not want.
Oh, it's priceless then. Okay, we've got three other colleagues here on the other bill, so I'm going to quickly take them so they can get to the rest of their business. So let me close the public hearing on Senate Bill 320 for now, and we'll come back to it, and then open Senate Bill 534 and ask Senator Girard, Senator Johnson, and Representative Huffman to join us. I think that is all of our...
I just texted Rep. Davis.
He wanted to come,
to pop
too.
Over.
Okay.
And we have Senator Hansel flying low cover in the back of the room.
Oh, okay.
colleagues, I'm Senator Fred Girard. I represent Senate District 9. Colleagues, what we have before you on Senate Bill 534 really is a very, very simple bill, but it does have some controversy to it centered around the Aurora Airport. Let me just tell you why we came up with this bill. rural airports and airports in general were constructed outside of municipalities. There's a logic to that. We didn't want the planes and the helicopters landing inside the city. So what happened over time was that these airports were put on septic fields and well water. Well, in some areas, well water became critical. In other areas, the septic fields have a shelf life, and they're just no longer working. So rural airports have a real problem with sewer and water. This bill addresses that issue. And so all the bill does is very passively say that a city may offer sewer and water to an airport without annexation. Now, why do we want to do that? Because in between the airport and the city is oftentimes EFU land. Two, the city, if they annex, oftentimes has to pay for the sewer and water expansion. Under this, it's another part for the cities to play so that they can actually get some money for the expansion, and it's beneficial to the airport because we get sewer and water out to the airport. Again, this bill is passive. No city has to do anything. It says may. It doesn't say shall. So the opposition, which is in my district, is from Aurora. But the thing is, the opposition is wrong. And where they are wrong is that this saves, and I'm going to underline that, saves EFU property because you do not require an annexation. So this is a very good bill. It's a very simple bill if you want to read it. But again, the opposition is coming from Aurora, and it's really kind of hard for me to understand it. The nickname of my district is the helicopter district. We have three major helicopter industries there. Life Flight, which is critical to my district for obvious reasons. You have Columbia Helicopter and Helicopter Transport, which are critical not only to agriculture and the Christmas tree industry, but to timber and to fire suppression. So this bill, not just for my district, but over on the coast, when we get the big one, we're going to be dependent on rural airports, and we have to make them functional. And this just is another tool for a city if they wish to address this problem. Again, it is a may. It is not a shall. And so it's a very simple bill. It just gives another tool in the toolbox for a city to take and give sewer and water to an airport. That's all it does.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59, which includes Madras, and Senate Bill 534, which I am the chief sponsor on the House side, is a critical bill for Madras. I'm not going to speak to any other communities. I assume Senator Girard and others know their communities best, but I know this is a critical bill for Madras to extend utilities to the airport, and I would really appreciate your support on this. Thank you.
I'm Senator Betsy Johnson. I represent District 16. While the good senator represents the helicopter district, I'm here on behalf of helicopters. I've been a pilot in Oregon since the early 70s, and I was the aeronautical administrator for the state of Oregon in the 90s. I am absolutely ecumenical about which airports would be positively affected by this. I think this is a terrific bill. This morning, I was visited by the Industrial Lands Coalition, made up of the Oregon Economic Development Association, Associated Oregon Industries, Business Council, Business Association, Public Ports, Association of Counties, League of Cities, Thousand Friends of Oregon, Metro, the Business Alliance, Clackamas County. The list goes on. And they were explaining that their highest priority is investing in industrial site preparation that's critical, I'm reading from their material, critical to ensuring a competitive supply of industrial lands for business expansion and retention in traded sector companies. Traded sector companies offer higher wages, critical tax base for schools and other public services. Oregon lacks a supply of development-ready industrial lands to build a job base for Oregon. And it goes on to talk about why this is important. I find it absolutely astonishing that I'm being lobbied on this side to help development, and others that are on this list oppose this bill. I would share with you that one of their sites that they designate as of critical importance is the Pendleton Airport site, 525-acre industrial site included in Pendleton's urban growth boundary expansion. legislation that requires sewer and water infrastructure. They recognize that airports now are the locus of some of the exact high-volume, highly traded sector businesses. It used to be that airports just were a place where airplanes took off and landed. Using Representative Witt's, one of his airports, this is the home to some of the highest tech R&D that's happening in Columbia County. They are perfecting a sail, a seven-story high sail that allows a catamaran-based vessel to go out into the ocean. We're building airplanes that are short takeoff and landing, doing medical research there from a company that started out as an aviation company. And so this, as the good senator said, is simply a tool in the city's toolbox, a totally permissive bill. And I would add, having flown around this state for as long as I have, EFU next to an airport is their best friend. No houses, no noise complaints. And so the prospect that somehow this bill will ravage farmland near airports is certainly not in the airport's best interest. So I think that this is a completely appropriate bill to help maximize the potential of some of our airports. And we have heard from airports all over the state. You will hear from others that support the bill, but Baker City, Madras, the list goes on and on. This is a permissive opportunity to fully maximize the potential of some of our really outstanding airports. And I thank you for your consideration.
Questions? Representative Witt.
Mr. Chairman, will we be hearing from any witnesses today about the importance of airports to Oregon's economy? Do you know?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
If I could speak to Madras, my Madras mayor and city manager are here to speak directly to the jobs that will be created from this bill.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, if I may, I did not bring it, but as all one has to do is to bring an aerial photograph of the Aurora Airport and see the number of jobs that are created there. The other thing that I would like to speak to, having been the Aeronautics Administrator, is that there is this incorrect notion that airports can just creep. Airports that receive federal funding have to adhere to a master plan that is generally developed in cooperation with the FAA. And if you look at Aurora, just as a prime example, Aurora is bordered on four sides by major thoroughfares. I know because when I was Aeronautics Administrator, I proposed the idea of closing one of them on the south end and got my head handed to me. So the notion that somehow airports are just going to creep is simply fallacious. Any airport that a city would permissively help extend sewer and water to is probably subject to federal funding, which means they're subject to all of the federal strictures. But they are huge economic drivers in the places where they are. I don't know how many jobs have been created at the south end of Aurora, but a substantial number of jobs. And again, high-paying, the kind of jobs that all of us stand in front of podiums during the election cycle and say we want, they exist at airports like Scappoose and Aurora.
Follow-up. Yeah, I think there might be a couple of people. Like, I think Commissioner Cameron's going to talk about it, and then the Madras person. Then that might be it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Johnson's mentioned three airports that have a very significant amount of industrial development associated with them: Scappoose, Aurora, and Pendleton, that I'm aware of. Given the number of jobs, the number of workers that these jobs attract, given that we have pilots and passengers in and out of the airports, why in God's great earth would we ever deny someone the opportunity to use the restroom?
Yeah, we're going to take that as a yes. Mr. Chair, may I respond to my good colleague and friend? I would like to point out to you that one of the airports that's here in support of this bill, Madras, or represented through our friend and colleague, has been designated by the Federal Aviation Administration as one of the sites that will help integrate unmanned aerial systems into our national airspace plan. Oregon is part of what's called the Pan-Pacific Test Range, and we have three ranges, one in Pendleton, very significantly developed, and I might add that the state has just made a large investment in, the Warm Springs Reservation that will in all likelihood migrate to Madras simply because there is airport infrastructure in Madras, and Tillamook. And the companies that will be attracted to those airports are on the cutting edge of what promises to be a multi-billion dollar opportunity for those states that take advantage of it. When you think about the civilian application for drones, whether it's civiculture, agriculture, search and rescue, firefighting, marine exploration, other territorial, the list just goes on and on. And we are positioned with our three airports, or two airports, and I believe Madras, we are positioned to help make the rules for how those systems get integrated into our national system of airspace. I think we have an obligation to make an investment in airports to maximize their potential and thereby position Oregon really on the cutting edge of this new technology that's evolving literally by the minute.
Ms. Blitz?
Sure.
Senator Johnson, given the alternative to your bill, maybe that's why they're unmanned aerial vehicles.
Yeah, can I chime in on something?
Sure.
I'd like just to say that there has been an issue that this is going to be create competition in other cities for what's going to happen at the airport. Almost all the jobs that happen at airports are specific for airports. And they need to be at an airport. That's part of the job description. You're not going to put Life Flight in the middle of Canby. You're just not. It has to go out at an airport. So these are not jobs that are going to compete with, say, Wilsonville's commercial district. It's just not. It's totally different jobs.
It might compete with Salem's airport, but not nearby cities. Not that I care that much about the airport in my district, in the UGB. So here's my question. It's about annexation specifically. I can't tell from the bill. So I have a letter from Matt, from Jefferson County here, basically saying that the reason they would like it is it would allow them to move forward on a project without having to get the UGB extended and annexation completed. And I understand that from their letter, it said the bill provides immediate assistance needed to allow an immediate business expansion until the city can ultimately annex its airport property. Jefferson County looks forward to working with the city to complete the annexation. So here they seem to presume it will be annexed at some point. In the Aurora situation, I'm unclear if there's an objection to annexation, or it's just more of a sequencing issue like it is in the case of Madras, where eventual annexation is fine. It's just they don't want to have to wait for that to take advantage of this development of some, it's secret apparently, it's under confidentiality agreement, but some 100-acre process. The bill says a city may enter into an agreement pursuant to which the city provides water and sewer without requiring annexation or consent to eventual annexation. But could a city, under the exercising of the may, could they require a consent to annexation under this bill, or can they not?
The way I read the bill is they could.
Could.
And the thing is with Aurora, just be advised, if Aurora doesn't want it, Wilsonville doesn't want it, Canby doesn't want it, it's a may. It's not a shall. So, to make state policy predicated on the opposition around one airport, I think is a fallacy. It's a very simple bill, and again, it's just a may.
So, and you think the may also applies to the annexation, meaning they could if Aurora changed hands and decided they did want to annex to the airport,
they could attach a non-remonstrance agreement. The reason that the bill's written the way it is that I really felt that farmland was critical, and that was always one of the objections. And so making sure that they didn't have to incorporate EFU land in the annexation was extremely important. Yeah. And as the good senator talked about, the creep of the airport is really a non-issue in the sense that they still have to undergo all the land use laws they currently go through. This doesn't void any land use laws.
So So that brings up another question I had. The bill is aimed at airport expansion. The question I think people have is who else could tap into these services beyond just users of the airport? And I think the Farm Bureau has an amendment that says nobody can, just the airport users.
Well, first of all, I don't think it's geared to airport expansion. It's geared to water and sewer to the airports to address the problem that we're having with septic fields and groundwater. So the expansion outside of where the airport is still has to, if it's in the county, it has to go before the county. It's subject to all the open meetings laws and the hearings. There's no change in that law.
The challenge would be if they don't do it with annexation, meaning there is no annexation, you could end up with services going far past just an area that is intentionally built outside of UGB for logical reasons to things that are outside the UGB for illogical reasons, like they got a one-off from the legislature, for example. And in that case, you would have infrastructure potentially going a lot, leapfrogging past.
But to address that would have to do with the agreement between the city. If I was a city, I would say that all growth within the airport is subject to approval by the city. So,
I'm not worried about the airport. I'm worried about if it went past the airport. The infrastructure is now, other people trying to tap into this new infrastructure.
But that's not part of the bill.
As long as it's permissive, as long as you're right and it's permissive and the city can require annexation, I have a lot less heartburn about it. Because if somebody else wants to attach to it, they can agree to be annexed and then they can.
Absolutely.
Then they can attach to it.
The bill does not prevent annexation.
Okay. Other questions? Vice Chair Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senators and Representatives. I've heard that there may be amendments to the bill coming, but I don't see any on OLIS yet. And I wonder if you've heard of any of those and what they might look like, particularly along the lines of some mechanism to protect that EFUN that we're talking about. I understand it makes logical sense to me that we'd want to keep, the airports would want to keep that land essentially vacant or in agricultural use so we don't have a conflict. But those landowners may have a different idea if they see the opportunity to change their zoning designation somehow, because now they're at ready services going right through their property. And I wonder if you'd be amenable to extra protections for the farmland in connection with the annexation and the agreement language.
I haven't seen any amendments, and to be honest, this passed 5-0 out of the committee on the Senate side, 29-1. And I think the more that you weight it down, the more that it becomes a burdensome to the other airports, not just in the Aurora area, but Madras or wherever. So I personally do not want to see any amendments.
I am aware that the Farm Bureau has some concerns. I have talked with them. I have been very appreciative of how open they have been. I think they see value, and you'll have an opportunity to hear their concerns, but I was aware that they were thinking about drafting amendments. The other thing I want to point out to you, though, is, again, I started my remarks by saying I'm completely agnostic as to specific airports, and I would hate to see the Aurora tail wag the Goodbill dog. We're talking about not just expansion. We're talking about on airport, the availability of water to fight fire, the availability of an airport to build additional hangars when they are required by the fire marshal or the local fire chiefs to have adequate water for fire suppression. This is a good bill. And I think that it is perhaps getting bogged down with a lot of imagined complexities. Totally permissive, has to require the cooperation between the airport sponsor and the city. But I am aware, and I can't sit here straight-faced and tell you that I haven't discussed that with the Farm Bureau, and again, express my appreciation for their willingness to hear the arguments about why this is a good bill unamended.
Further questions for our colleagues? Okay, we've got a lot of people to testify on both these bills, so we'll let those three go, get Representative Davis up, and then we'll go back to our other bills while Representative Post is at his business. Yeah, please. Commissioner Cameron, you may join him.
Did you knock out all the
did he do all the work sessions?
Good afternoon, colleagues. I'm State Representative John Davis. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. I represent House District 26, which includes Wilsonville, Sherwood, King City, Hillsborough, the Beaverton area, and up to Hillsborough. I am testifying in support of Senate Bill 534. First of all, speaking to the limited scope of the bill, I think there are a lot of criticisms being lobbied at this bill, which talk about it making seismic changes to Oregon land use law. I would ask that you focus on the substance and the permissive nature. There's nothing mandatory in this bill, but the permissive nature of this bill, and that it's limited to a city may permissively enter into an agreement pursuant to which the city provides sewer and water services to the airport. There's nothing in the bill that says it has to be provided to any other landowners. There's nothing in the bill that says it changes land use policy. There's nothing in the bill that says it changes our goals for land use policy. In fact, I think the goals of this bill are quite noble in that it actually protects foundation farmland, because we know that with a UGB expansion and annexation, they necessarily require large expansions as part of a large plan that in many instances can take out and take up and develop foundation farmland. This bill seeks to ease the pressure on developing foundation farmland by focusing the development on, frankly, an already existing industrial zone of airports that have activity, that have industrial and commercial activity already around them. To the extent that we can assist airports in staying away from cities and mitigating the conflicts that occur when we bring cities and residences close to airports, we can mitigate those land use conflicts and centralize the development closely around airports through the provision of sewer and water. I also want to emphasize the point made by my previous colleagues, which is this is not a one-off bill. This is not about a single airport. I don't have these airports in my district. We do benefit from the Aurora Airport. We do benefit from the Hillsborough Airport in my district, having both of those close by. But this is not about helping a single airport. I think the first panel that came up expressed that quite well. It could be used for the benefit of Aurora Airport and other airports in the state, but this is not about a single airport. This is about making clear that under a permissive provision, a city may, and is not required to, enter into an agreement for development of sewer and water around an existing industrial area of airports. It's very simple, and I would ask that you remain focused on the intent of the bill and the language of the bill. Thank you.
Chair Clem, good to see you.
You too.
Rep Helm, I'm glad you're keeping my chair warm over there.
Yeah.
Members of the committee. It's good to be in front of you today. For the record, Kevin Cameron, Marion County Commissioner. And Representative Gilliam, I think we need to get grocery plastic bags or something up front for umbrellas, because this one ripped when I walked into the building and put my umbrella through it. So maybe you could do something about that.
If it was paper, that wouldn't happen, though.
Yeah, okay. Back to the seriousness of the issue and the bill that's before us. Marion County is the number one agricultural producer in the state of Oregon. Over 640 million farm products in the year 2014. Agriculture is the number one industry that we want to protect in Marion County, and as a commissioner, it's my duty to make sure that farmland's preserved and that we honor that. We must preserve as much high-value farmland as possible to continue to honor agriculture and what it stands for our county and for our state. As such, before even the session, when Senator Girard and I talked about this particular bill, we went to the Marion County Farm Bureau one night, sat there and listened and presented the bill to the Marion County Farm Bureau and had them ask questions, much like we're doing in this hearing. And they decided to stay neutral on this bill because they realized that this bill would protect the high-valued farmland in Marion County that is so precious and dear to them. I don't know what the Oregon Farm Bureau is saying, but Marion County stayed neutral on the bill. Wells and septic tanks, they limit the use of ground area that could be used for infilling of buildings that promote the original intent of our land use laws.
So you have an airport with septic and wells. It's taking up property where we literally could put buildings in and be high density, which is what we want to do in Oregon so that we prevent the urban sprawl that so many other states have suffered from. And our 1970s land use laws were intended to do that, not stop growth, but to control where that growth actually happened. At the Aurora Airport, there's over 1,000 jobs there. 1,000 jobs at the Aurora Airport. And I know, Representative Gilliam, you got to take a tour. Senator Girard, if you ever want to take a tour of the Aurora Airport, I can set that up for you. We also have the Salem Airport, Chair Clem, and I know it's a valuable asset to industries such as Garmin that's expanded there and continues to expand. And these are jobs that are high-wage, high-intense paying jobs. Most of those 1,000 jobs, I don't know, there's some people here that are employers there, but I know that Columbia Helicopters, those jobs are stationed around the world, but the payroll comes out of here and comes back to here. There is Wilson Construction that has their flight craft based out of there. Fleur Industries, which is in Wilsonville, uses that airport for their flights. So there's a high concentration of economic activity around that airport, and if we had the ability to infill with even more structure, we certainly would not have the urban sprawl that you're going to hear people behind me that are afraid of happening to our state. Again, I want to stress this bill is permissive. You're going to hear probably somebody from the city of Aurora, a city council person that opposes this bill. Well, if their city council doesn't want to do this, they don't have to do it. So it's up to the city council and the city to be able to decide with the Aurora Airport, if we're talking about that airport, whether they wanted to move forward or not. It doesn't force anybody to do anything. So it doesn't mandate any action by a city or a county. I want to stress that this bill did pass the Senate 29-1, came out of committee unanimously. It is something that preserves the high-value farmland. The bill stays within what we're trying to do as far as infiltrate high-density growth in our state and in the areas that are already growing. So I appreciate your time today, and I thank you for your service, and I know the difficult job you have and how much fun it can be.
Questions? So I asked LC, why can't a city currently already make an agreement to annex to somebody, given it's their services, and I thought they had the right to go outside of their city boundaries if they wanted to. And the answer was they can, but if they're going to go outside the UGB, not just outside their boundaries, but outside the UGB, then they would have to apply for a goal exception because it's in the land use goals. So it seems to me the most accurate way to summarize this bill is it allows for an alternative way to extend services from a city to an airport that was probably built by design outside of the UGB to keep it away from houses and that kind of thing. It's an alternative way to do it versus a goal exception. And I think that's probably what we're going to end up focusing on is what's so bad about a goal exception? What's causing delays? Like Madra said, we have a time-sensitive opportunity, and so I want to hear from them about how long it would take if they'd use the other option to do something like this. But then I still think we're going to have to get clarification because I'm not sure in reading the bill that the city could require eventual annexation because it authorizes a discretionary role for the city and the airport to enter into an agreement pursuant to which they provide city sewer and water services without requiring the annexation or consent to annexation. So it gives you an optional way to enter into an agreement with those terms. I'm not sure you can alter the terms of it in the way the bill's currently written. I think Senator Girard thought you could, but I'm not so sure about that. I think you would. The city may not be able to require eventual annexation under the terms of this bill. Which I think is relevant because if the city ever does grow out to there, I've always held the position you shouldn't force people to annex when you're not giving them anything. But if they're asking to get on your city water, your city sewer, you know, having you sign a non-remonstrance agreement for the future to me seems reasonable personally.
Chair Clem, I'll put it on the record. I think the intent is to get the services there would not require annexation at that particular time to implement those services. I don't think the bill prevents any agreement to saying, as such time, when we
get
reach,
out there anyway.
Reach there, you agree to be annexed into the city. I don't think that that would prevent anybody from putting that into their agreement. And I'll put that on the record that that's legislative intent, I think, that Fred, Senator Girard would have as well. But
sounded like it.
I think that's why he was trying to say that. But as of today, to do this, we can't require you or we won't require you to come in. But in a future date, we could put that in the agreement.
And you know, to be honest, that's kind of the way I would even feel about future expansion, meaning if Marion County could get an expansion, an applicant for land outside the airport, let's say we pass the bill and they extend service to the airport, and then somebody else wants to get it attached to that. If they've already been annexed and are brought into the UGB, then I don't see the problem with them attaching to it at that point, because there's been, as Representative Davis said, a whole bunch of other land use processes that already had to happen for them to be now in the UGB of an area. I probably wouldn't be too excited about other people who aren't related to the airport attaching to the airport without an eventual consent decree, because at that point you are promoting things other than You're promoting development outside of the airports that are not related to a logical reason to be outside of a UGB. And in general, I don't like that so much.
And yeah. Chair Clem, if I could respond to that, I appreciate that point you're bringing up about unrelated parties potentially wanting to tap into services.
Yeah.
As I read the bill, it says the city may agree to provide these services to the airport. To me, the language of the bill doesn't go beyond that in allowing the airport to allow others to attach on to airport. That would be a violation of the agreement and of this bill if it became statute, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. As long as they're outside the UGB, they would have to go for a goal exception probably to attach to it as well.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Other questions? We miss both of you on this committee dearly.
Feels
especially
good
to be when home. One of our vice chairs, actually, Representative Gillen, would you like to talk about Vice Chair Helms' comment on his other committee last night?
No, but I would like to say I do miss Representative Davis.
The vice chair was telling his other committee what a great committee it was. Okay, let's go. Let me make sure I don't have any other members here. Okay. Let's go back to food. Let me think. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's stay with the airport thing while we're on it for the moment. Okay, so we've had the sponsor speak. Let's try and do for and against panels. So why don't we just had some fours. Let's do some against. So Ben Williams, Greg Taylor. And Chris Sally. There's some scrawl down the side of it that says elected and panel. Did I get right who you want to have?
First, or?
Yeah, do you want to put our citizens against the other elected officials here, Chair Clem?
Hold on.
I think you're being set up by that question.
Yeah, I think. How about I do the three electeds then? So Chris Seller, Mayor Tim Knapp, and Councillor Charlotte Lehan. I know her title. Please, welcome.
Thank you.
The sign-up sheet is just a mess. People have, drawn arrows everywhere, and I want to go with him. You're not going to get to do that. I'm just going to call him in order after this. Sorry. Please.
Chair Clem, Vice Chairs Post and Helm, and members of the committee, my name is Tim Knapp. I'm the mayor of Wilsonville. The city of Wilsonville opposes Senate Bill 534 for a number of reasons. Firstly, it's unnecessary legislation. Oregon law currently allows for provision of municipal water and sewer services outside of cities to an airport. conditioned on an agreement reached that provides for eventual annexation into the municipality. Municipal governance with urban services is one key tenet of Oregon land use law. Secondly, the legislation proposed is contrary to Oregon land use law, which is predicated on the principle that cities are the centers of urban level development and that prime farmland is to be protected from urban encroachment. You've heard aspirations for significant industrial development and jobs development around airports. Those proposals that people are citing excitement about can happen around any airport that's in a municipality now. You will note that the city of Hillsborough is the municipality hosting the Hillsborough Airport, and it is the most active general aviation and job center field in this state. So everything that says you can't do this in the city is belied by the history and the experience we all have with the Hillsborough Airport. There are major potential negative unintended consequences. First of all, there are significant unfunded impacts on roads, streets, our surface transportation facilities. There is an inability to fund necessary infrastructure to accommodate the urban level activity that the proponents are seeking. There is, under this bill, unfair competition, which harms the existing and prospective public and private real estate interests that are working on investments to bring industrial lands into production in areas where those types of uses are already approved. This legislation creates a situation where businesses located at an airport may operate at an artificially lower rate due to public subsidy of the full cost of public infrastructure that enables that development to go forward. The businesses would not be carrying their fair share of the load. Allowing businesses in one area to operate with a public subsidy while other businesses nearby are paying the regular full cost within a city configuration that accommodates their impacts, things such as transportation, water, wastewater, stormwater infrastructure, such would create an unfair playing field for both public and private sector investment that has already happened and that is happening. The subsidy by one public entity harms other nearby cities and property owners whose commercial and industrial properties are undercut by the unfair, publicly subsidized competition from such airport development. 534 harms existing and planned public and private investments that are currently underway. Within the Tri-County area, there is currently over 8,800 acres of vacant and redevelopment area available for job and industrial development. Those areas are lacking public investment dollars in infrastructure to be able to produce those jobs. We all want to see that happen, but jumping over those existing investments and planned investments to go outside of municipal areas to add more unserved land that will be competing for those same infrastructure dollars is a fallacy. Adding more cheap, publicly subsidized industrial sites near the Aurora State Airport has the potential to undercut and directly compete with existing and planned investments in the cities of Aurora, Canby, Wilsonville, and other areas. These cities and state agencies have been working to bring such industrial sites into production with long-term plans for infrastructure investment and development of activity in appropriate places. With regard to the Aurora Airport, which is a specific driver of this legislation, in spite of what you're hearing around the state, it's not a simple issue. It's a very complex issue. All of the jobs and industry that people have been talking about here at this table in the last half hour can happen within municipal governance and should happen under Oregon land use law within municipal governance. The fact is, no nearby city to the Aurora Airport seeks to provide the services that are being talked about. You have in your files formal letters from the cities of Wilsonville, Aurora, and Canby saying they do not seek to provide services to the Aurora Airport. All of these cities have formally rejected this proposal. State agencies in the past have looked at the cost of development in this geographic area and have found that there are huge transportation costs. Nine state agencies cite more than $500 million in public infrastructure would be necessary to accommodate the type of development around the Aurora Airport that the proponents seek. There would be huge commuter and freight traffic overload along the I-5 corridor, which already gridlocks. There's no alternative crossing to the I-5 bridge over that's called the Boone Bridge over the Willamette River. In fact, that bridge carries more commercial freight traffic than the Columbia River Crossing Bridge carries because the Columbia River Crossing splits it with the Henry Jackson. There is poor multimodal connectivity. There are significant distances from population centers, which would force commuting, further jamming those high-value corridors where we need to provide capacity for freight and commerce. There's a lack of available water. There's a lack of wastewater treatment capacity, which is expensive and difficult to provide. There are no new wastewater outfalls being approved on the Willamette River, nor will there be in the foreseeable future. The lack of transportation infrastructure adequacy and funding resources create travel hazards now, would have significantly more travel hazards later if we did not provide that huge level of investment. All of this hurts agricultural operations and their ability to move. The urban development of the type that's being proposed around airports would further exacerbate the unresolved governance conflicts that are now existent over land use and local impacts. And the French Prairie agricultural community would be negatively impacted in significant ways. These foundation farmlands currently produce a lot of jobs and a lot of income, a big piece of our traded sector economy. We have many local businesses that are engaged in this area. One example would be the 500-plus employees of the Wilsonville, Tualatin area Pacific Natural Foods, which is a national food processor that also farms more than 1,000 acres in the Aurora Airport area. The kind of impacts that you're saying for some speculative future jobs will negatively impact the existing jobs that are actually producing for our economy. The city of Wilsonville has worked with several others and developed three proposed amendments that you now have in front of you. They're not lengthy, so perhaps you can take a quick look at them. We do not see a significant upside to this bill because of all these unintended consequences and the fact that the kind of development that's being argued for can happen under appropriate municipal governance, just as it does with the Hillsborough Airport. But if you just choose to go forward, we would recommend these three amendments, one dealing with financial responsibility and transparency, arguing that the cost of infrastructure development should not be shifted to the general public as a subsidy to private landowners that seek to develop their own personal piece of industrial land. Second one that would provide for protection of prime agricultural land if this were to go forward. And the third one that would require concurrence not just from one city, but from the other cities impacted. The cities of Wilsonville, Tualatin, Sherwood, along with Washington County, are working on a couple thousand acres in the Basalt Creek area, designated by Metro in 2002 to be industrial growth area. Subsidized industrial expansion in an inappropriate place around the airport will negatively compete with for public funds to continue the work to bring those areas that have been designated into production. I implore you to think carefully about the broad impacts of this, not a simplistic view that sees only the highlights. Thank you.
And thank you for coming down, Mr. Mayor. Councilor?
Chair Clem and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Charlotte Lehan, city councilor with the city of Wilsonville. I am a former mayor of Wilsonville, a former Clackamas County commissioner, and I was one of the members of the Core 4 who oversaw the urban-rural reserves process and was particularly concerned with this part of French Prairie and the foundation farmlands and how best to protect them. I'm going to depart from what I said here because I'm very confused after listening both to the discussion here and the testimony from the proponents. Because on the one hand, I'm hearing that it's a very simple bill just to get bathrooms at the airport. And on the other hand, I'm hearing the same proponents testifying that this is a tremendous opportunity for industrial development. In fact, high density industrial development and thousands of jobs. Those are two different things in the land use arena, and those are two different things in terms of municipal need for oversight. And I would say that if it's not clear what exactly this bill does it promote the rural airport that just needs toilets and water, or is it to promote an industrial park and thousands of jobs? Because that belongs in a city. It belongs in a city like PDX is in a city, like Hillsborough Airport is in a city, like FLIR will always has been located inside the city of Wilsonville. So is Columbia Helicopters now. Their corporate headquarters are inside the city of Wilsonville. If you're talking about major industrial expansion, that is the concern. The city of Wilsonville has never opposed operations at the Aurora Airport, never opposed the addition of a tower, even though that has been testified to in the past. What we are opposed to is this creeping industrial urban sprawl onto prime agricultural lands without benefit of effective municipal oversight. And if it is as confusing to you as to what it allows and what it does not allow, then I would suggest that it does indeed need amendments of some sort to protect high-value farmland and give it the path to the appropriate municipal oversight, if indeed that is what's really the game plan here. But there is a lot of concern for good reason in French Prairie, and it deserves your full consideration of how best to protect farmland and make this a logical path to annexation, if that's what the real goal is. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Let's go ahead and finish.
Hi, I'm Chris Salee, and I'm a Aurora City Councilor. And I had just was going on the website this morning, and I didn't see that our letter had gotten uploaded. And so really all I wanted to do today was have the opportunity to read the letter from our city council that we had sent to Chairman Clem. And if you would allow me to do that, I would appreciate that. The letter was sent to Representative Clem on April 2nd. And in regards to the Senate Bill 534, and it just reads, the City Council of the City of Aurora would like to be on record opposing Senate Bill 534, which is now in your committee. The bill would allow any city to sell water or sewer services to an airport without the provision for at least eventual annexation. The council does not fully understand the implications of this bill and how it would fit within existing land use processes. We believe that this proposal lacks transparency and is aimed primarily at the Aurora Airport. We also understand that this proposal comes to you as a result of the advocacy of the Wilsonville Chamber of Commerce. Proper open public discussions with the City of Aurora would need to take place before any consideration for annexation and offering of public services could be made. Our rural lands are not well served by allowing airports to become mini urbanized areas without proper land use planning and jurisdictional oversight. We urge you not to approve the bill. And this was signed by our City Council President, Jason Salen. So that's all I had, was just wanted to present that to you. Thank you.
I'm going to read something I just got back in from LC, who was notified of my question. They said, operating on the assumption that the bill is necessary for the city to be able to provide sewer and water services to the airport, then SB 534 provides the only method for doing so. It's permissive in that the city and the airport don't have to enter into such an agreement, but if they do, then SB 534 describes how it must be done, i.e. without requiring annexation or consent to eventual annexation. So I think you wouldn't actually currently, the way it's written, you would not be able to put in a requirement. You can enter into agreement voluntarily. You would not be able to put into the agreement. You will later agree to be annexed if our boundaries ever touch yours, for example. Mm-hmm. It didn't sound like that was objectionable to the sponsors of the bill, but I think the main question I probably have for the cities who are potentially the ones who later may decide you would want to invoke this bill, because if obviously none of you invoke the bill, nothing happens. But if you later thought you would, is your main objection the governance issue, meaning as long as you could require annexation in exchange, if you could require annexation in exchange for offering the services, and then you build in whatever costs that are now going to be borne by the city to extend all the way to this piece of property, is that as objectionable? Or is the part that's objectionable that you can't even require annexation as part of the discretionary portion of the bill?
Chair Clem, members of the committee, I would say the latter is the answer to your question. Oregon law currently, with no change, allows to provide services with a future annexation agreement. That does not require this kind of legislation. All of the openings for mischief, private sector, individual interest being advanced over the public interest, all of these components are brought into play by the wording in this bill. I do not think it's fair or appropriate for certain property owners around airports to advance their personal agenda and seeking to develop their personal property in advance of all the planning and public investment that has been made in other areas that are already being developed, that are planned for development.
It's about off-airport properties?
Yes, other industrial properties in the area. Yeah. The thing about requiring one local city to approve is that if one local city approves, it doesn't impact just that city. It puts that publicly subsidized piece into play against property that is seeking to be developed or industrialized in surrounding cities also. So saying, well, one city has to agree. In this case, if Aurora were to decide in the future to agree, it would still negatively impact Canby, which has industrial property they want to develop. It would negatively impact Wilsonville, which has property they're trying to develop. It would negatively impact the city of Tualatin, which has the same. It isn't a matter of just one city. If you're out in the middle of the desert, maybe there's only one city within near distance. The amendments that we have proposed saying you must obtain agreement from all cities within 3 miles, as the suggested, which would keep it from having one city decide they were going to provide services and negatively impacting all the surrounding city areas.
So I think the reason for I had asked LC, why couldn't this just be done under existing law? And the answer seems to be, assuming that you could require a non-remonstrance agreement, which the bill I don't think reads that way right now, but no. Let's say it were changed to do that. The reason to still do a bill would be to not have to go through the exceptions process. That's, at that point, the city already has the authority to go extraterritorially, but they don't outside of a UGB without a goal exception. So this is another way to accomplish it versus go through the goal exceptions, have the legislature create a route for them to expand.
Sir, I concur that that is what it would do. The question is it a good idea to provide an end run around Oregon land use law that has been carefully thought about and litigated and clarified over the last several decades in order to advantage a limited number of private property owners who want to jump to the head of the line for public infrastructure investments?
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm not totally sold on the concept that the land use system was intended to put airports inside of cities, because maybe half of them aren't. Salem is.
And Hillsborough is.
Yeah, and for me to view Aurora as an expansion area means it probably is in some competition for airport businesses. I would say my city is more in competition with Aurora than yours is, because you don't have an airport. I do have an airport. Mm-hmm. So when Garmin wants to expand, it could look at Salem or it could look at Aurora. Now, I'm not going to be territorial about just protecting my own district, but do you think that either Wilsonville or Canby is ever going to try and build an airport? Because I get your argument if it's non-aeronautic related businesses that fly. I don't really understand the argument if it's like Life Flight. They can't just go into Wilsonville and one of your other industrial parks because they need air traffic control.
That's true, but manufacturing instrumentation, such as Rockwell Collins does at a major facility in the city of Wilsonville, or your example may be Garmin, that kind of manufacturing is not inherently necessary to be on an airport, and yet that is much of the type of expansion that the proponents are seeking. They're seeking to a cheaper piece of ground without municipal governance, but with public subsidy, in competition with industrial areas that have been planned and are the long-term objective of regional government, of local governments throughout the metropolitan area.
I'm not sure everybody here is seeking without municipal governments, because our letter from Madras says they are planning on an annexation. They just would like to get this one done more quickly than when the annexation may occur. But in Aurora, I understand the way the bill is written would lead you to believe they don't want to ever be annexed. And I toured the Aurora airport, and I believe the gentleman when I talked to said they would prefer not to be annexed.
That's what we've heard also.
Yeah.
Chair Clem, part of the confusion here has been what the definition of the airport is. When we say we're going to serve the airport, all of the through-the-fence kinds of operations that have grown up around a place like Aurora over the last decade kind of muddy the water as to whether we're providing that those municipal services to the airport or to these various businesses that are operating through the fence. And I don't know what protections there are currently that would limit that from happening to that it creeps out.
Many.
Right.
They could be constrained to the footprint of the airport without
exactly
too much about what's going to happen. But on the footprint of the airport, I'm not clear in through the fence access airports. You know, do you have to fly planes or not? Do you have to?
Yes.
I don't know enough about that.
And it's become increasingly fuzzy at Aurora, and that's driving a lot of the concern.
I will say personally, having toured it, that I can see the advantage if you're looking for aeronautics-related businesses, because they were in Corvallis, and they couldn't seem to get a lot of agreement for expansion, so they moved. This is called Western
Helicopter Transport.
Yeah. And they, you know, they build a $35 million building on Aurora because Corvallis wasn't that interested in them. So I can see why people in that business, and they fly helicopters, they need to be able to actually fly in and out. I can see why, if you've got an airport, you view it as a potential job-drawing thing, just like for Salem Garmin was a great way to get, you know, a couple hundred new, very, like, $90,000 a year jobs. But again, we don't have to deal with farming neighbors. We deal with all my constituents who are mad every time more expansion of the airport in the UGB happens, because then there's more planes coming in and out and noise, and they don't really like that either.
But any time you're building a $35 million building, it involves more than sewer and water. It involves a lot more city oversight and services. It should involve things like a transit plan, things like pedestrian access, things like road access, which are very poor around the Aurora Airport, stormwater, all of those requirements that are significant in a municipal area. And you've already given them the two plum services that which are sewer and water. And then you're going to come along a decade later and say, now we'd like you to pony up for these other impacts. It hasn't worked out well historically. That's where you get Nike or Oak Grove or places that have urbanized way beyond what they should without being part of a city.
That's usually where I see the city's desire to want to be able to put a non-remonstrance agreement on it if they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That if they can't, and the bill right now would prohibit them from doing it, I can see exactly why cities for all the sticking up I do for my East Salem constituents who don't want to be annexed, the reason is because they don't use any city services. Once they want to attach to the city, I have a lot less sympathy for them, because now you are going to have the rest of the city pay to get the infrastructure out to your house, and it's not really fair to say, I don't want to be part of the city, but I do want to buy into, you know, a whole suite
just
of city
things
services.
I want.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a bunch of other people, too, but any questions for these three? Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, are they... I don't know if you gentlemen are four or not, but I think you might be because you came in from Madras and you're over 100 miles. So I'm going to have the Madras folks. And is that Royce and Gus come up? And then is there anybody else four? Is there anybody else here who is... Oh. He wants to be last? Oh, okay. Is there anybody else here for besides Ken Hector, who I know, but is there anyone else here for? Would you like to join us? Yeah. Okay. And since you're our 100-mile or more guest, why don't you two gentlemen start?
Okay. I'm Royce M. Banks, Mayor of Madras, Chairman Clem and the committee. In spite of the previous alarmist testimony, I don't believe the sky is falling if this bill gets passed. We're a small town of 6,700. We have an economic opportunity in a county that has 9% unemployment. We have a company that's going to bring in anywhere from 45 to 60 jobs with an $18 million phase one investment. We want to attract that. It's not only good for the city, but the county and the state. We have a sewer treatment plant 100 yards from where this building is going to be proposed at in the facility. I would have a hard time explaining to the residents of Madras why we weren't allowed to connect the sewer to this building. Doing a septic system not only ties up land that they want to use, but it's silly considering that we have a completely DEQ-qualified facility 100 yards away, and we're going to be pouring effluent into the ground. To me, that doesn't even make sense, and it wouldn't to any of the people in the town of Madras. So what we're asking for is passage of this bill so that we can complete our connection with this the company that's going to come into Madras, and they're very enthusiastic about it. But we're trying to work so that we can get that facility in as soon as possible without any major problems. We're considering on annexing the entire airport eventually, but we're a small town, and we have to take these things by steps, and they're not steps that are very fast. So we're asking for this bill to be passed so that we may be able to do this as soon as we can so that we can have the benefit of this facility.
Please.
Thank you, Chair Clem and committee members. My name is Gus Burrell. I'm the city administrator for City Madras, and we thank you for your time on this bill. Some of the points have been brought up on why don't we pursue goal exceptions and things like that, and maybe make sure I have the context right. The city owns the airport. It's been handed down through the federal government. It was a World War II trainer base. The company that wishes to expand on there needs a significant footprint. They test vehicles on their R&D type, and they want to expand that facility. They're closing their East Coast facility down, and they want to go, in addition to roughly 107 days a year, they want to go to full-time and bring employees out in buildings. And those buildings will have office spaces and shops and different industrial uses to go with those testing facilities. And so our plant sits and resides out there, built in the 70s, been there a long time. We have several different lessees on the airport already, and so due to the amount of acreage there, we do aeronautical uses, but we also have other ground uses that FAA supports us to do so we can support the airport. When we improve the runway, FAA's move from, it's a pretty good deal. They used to fund 95% of capital improvements on the airport, the taxiway and the runways primarily. Now they're at 90%. But when you have to build a multi-million dollar runway, that 5 to 10%, we have to come up with our cost share through the ground leases and the development we authorize at the airport. And so we have some fiscal obligations, and so why we need to see development grow and occur at our airport to take care of it and to keep it going. It does serve our whole region. When we get into firefighting operations, they're based out of here. Right now, we have a Hillsboro-based company that's expanded into here and is doing the retrofitting on MD-87s, Aero-Air. And so they have room to test there. It's the Port of Portland gets testing and dropping loads of material, and the Port of Portland area is a lot of air traffic. And so our airport does serve regional needs and even outside of the state. So when we talk about Aero-Air, they got 4 service contracts. So definitely traded sector and helping a lot of the U.S. But when we look at this testing facility that we're looking to expand, they're not just looking at the U.S., but they're exploring some of the European board options as well. We have land to offer. They need a lot of it. And so they do need to look for where that they've been using, what's most cost-effective for them. All those choices are going in. Now, as being the municipality, when they site develop, they go through our land use regulations. We work closely with the county. It has an airport management zone over the entire airport. We're not asking to serve any farms or go through any farms with this bill. The airport is adjacent to our urban growth boundary. Part of the airport property is in the urban growth boundary. We've been talking to the state with ELCD and DEQ saying, how do we annex this most efficiently? And they do want us to go through a findings process. And so they might say, well, you can justify a couple hundred acres, but we can't get you to your 1,700. And so it looks like it will take multiple phases to ultimately annex our property. That doesn't make us real ready to serve development. Developments usually are looking for sizing this up. They want to know within a few months, can you go or not? Not in a year, will you be annexed, or 2 years, and is there any appeals? And so we're asking for the assistance of this bill to make us ready to be clearly permittable. And yes, our goal is to annex. We will, when we sign a ground lease, it will say you consent to annex in there. So that is our long-term goal. This bill really, from our perspective, helps us be shovel ready and gives some surety to the development. What can they do or not do as they're making their determinations? Where are we going to go with this decision? And so we really ask your support of this Senate Bill 534. From our perspective, we understand Wilsonville's concerns. If there's some parameters or safeguards that need to go in to protect those concerns, we certainly want to support that. But our ultimate need is to permit in those ways they want to see permitting occur and make sure that oversight is occurring. At our airport, that's already in place through the ownership. And so we understand you got a little bit of apples and oranges, but ultimately, for economic development reasons, we want to be environmentally responsible with our ground. We don't want to go into septic systems. And then we've taken out a significant amount of debt as a community. And Royce is right. If we go back and say, no, they had to put a septic field in 100 yards away from the plant, the community's wondering, what are you doing? We've taken all this debt out, but we're not serving each new development with it. So I think we have a responsibility to our community to get them hooked up to that plan. We would ask for your support to get there from here. So thank you again for your time. Be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Sir.
Hi, my name is Tony Helbling. I'm the logistics manager for Wilson Construction Company. I live at 21042 Jenny Marie Lane in Aurora, Oregon. I'm coming to talk about a few things. First off, I'll admit it. I'm a recovering commercial airplane and helicopter pilot. So most of the people in the room hate me. So I'm the guy that makes noise when I fly over. I'm also a past commander of the Oregon Army National Guard medevac unit here in Salem. I'm a past president of an economic development 501c3 in Canby that developed the Pioneer Industrial Park. I also served as a city councilor and planning commissioner in Canby, as well as the president of the Urban Renewal District that dealt with that Pioneer Industrial Park out there. So I'm also not a very smart guy. So I'd like to talk about infrastructure development and how it's primary to success of our state as a whole. First off, we've discussed about airports that are outside of UGBs and outside of city limits and airports that are inside of city limits. I venture to say that when the airports were originally built and designed, they weren't inside city limits. Cities grew up, they progress out to and around airports. The airport in Portland, I believe, used to be down by Swan Island. And then as the city grew, people didn't like it there, so they moved it out to a mud flat that they put a levee around because there was nothing out there and nobody to complain about it. There was no industrial growth, no growth whatever. Same thing with Aurora, same thing with Madras, same thing with Klamath Falls, same thing with Baker, same thing with St. Joseph. Joseph, Oregon, Coos Bay, all these places, they put the airport out where land's cheap, where there's not a lot of people, and they do that for a reason. Inevitably, what happens is municipalities grow partially because of the airports, because once you have connectivity, you can get to the community, and then more people want to live there. So with respect to emergency management, the value of an airport, let me go back to my medevac days when I sat in the Emergency Operations Center for the state during the floods of 1996. We saved 72 people, two dogs, and one cat. And the guy who saved that cat still has his flight suit ripped up from it. This cat wasn't too happy. But the point being is, when you have an emergency, like a flood, which we've had in the Willamette Valley, like the earthquake we're going to have in the Willamette Valley, let alone the state, you've got to have airports with infrastructure. And they have to be served with infrastructure for a number of reasons. They're going to be logistical hubs to move supplies and to move people. You're going to have to move, and I don't want to call them refugees, but people are hurt. You're going to have to move them from one place to another. An airport is, and you look at any FEMA emergency management plan in this country, or let alone the world, airports are the central hubs of emergency planning because they're a large open space, and you can get helicopters or airplanes in there. The other thing that will happen at the airport is medical care. Because of the way the military does emergency responses and FEMA does it, they're going to bring in medical teams and medical holding areas and stuff like that. They're going to set them up next to airports so that they can evacuate casualties out of an area. Shifting over to just general aviation, and what I want to talk about is a couple things. The type of jobs that we're talking about associated with the airport. If you look at Aurora, and I'm not here to talk specifically about Aurora, but there's on-airport jobs and there are jobs associated with the airport. On-airport jobs are going to come in two forms. One is the direct pilot flying the aircraft and the crews that are working on his aircraft. And for us, in our company, it's a flight department. It has 15 people associated with the airport and six helicopters, three airplanes. But our company also is in the city of Canby, where we have 150 employees at that facility, also in Woodburn, where we're building a 15-acre truck support shop. But we have a payroll of around 500 to 750 people that work throughout the United States. That payroll goes through the city of Canby. Our tool purchasing, our legal department, our accounting, all of that is in the city of Canby. So you have two types of jobs associated with the airport, the direct association with the actual aircraft flying, and then the indirect association with, and FLIR is a great example. They build, well, you know what they built, but they're predominantly up in Wilsonville in the industrial area. And I agree with what Mayor Knapp said about having those kind of jobs in those locations. But if you also look at HTSI and you look at Columbia Helicopters, Columbia is taking three aircraft that the Army gave them, not the Army, but the Moroccan government put at Aurora for Columbia to refurb those aircraft and take them overseas. It's a $6 million contract. You can't do that in downtown Wilsonville. And I don't see Salem wanting to build an airport out here on State Street to add infrastructure to build more airports inside. So some of those jobs have to be at an airport. And that's why I see what Madras is doing is the right thing to do. They want to develop associated airport jobs, either flight departments or the actual industry that's out there. Now, that said, think about the Canby Industrial Park out there. Shovel-ready land, and when a company that is going to employ or is going to have a corporate aircraft, which, the last time I checked, Aurora is one of the attractions for a company to locate in an industrial park, is having the ability to land their corporate aircraft there. And a company that has one corporate aircraft is going to be between $150 and $200 million a year gross income for that company. That's 100 employees, 100 family wage-paying jobs that are going to be over in an industrial park because their corporate headquarters or their corporate is located in Wilsonville or in Lake Oswego or in Woodburn, so they can have proximity to an airport they can get in and out of. So those are major impacts and with respect to economy. The passengers will tell you is not as the media portrays.
Sir, can you also, just because you have pretty practical experience. Some of the rest of us don't. Can you sort of focus in on currently the Aurora Airport has attracted some pretty good sized ones with just sewer and wells, but what would help about the septic or about city services? Because I was, to be honest, I was surprised at the size of the companies there running off of wells and sewers or wells and septic tanks.
And we're one of them. We now own one of the major hangars there.
Yeah.
Own one of it. And the problem is the restriction of growth. These jobs are going to come somewhere in the United States. Where a company decides to go, or they're going to go somewhere in the United States. And I don't want to say, don't be a NIMBY, not my backyard or a banana build, absolutely nothing anywhere next to anything. They've got to go somewhere. Aviation companies, they make noise. That's all there is to it. And if we restrict them so much that they have no place to go except to a friendly state like Texas or, somewhere like Utah or somewhere like that, but as a whole, Oregon tends to be unfriendly because of constant complaining about noise, constant, don't build it next to me. So if you have the infrastructure there, that would allow some properties, yes, and some properties are going to be developed around the airport, but they're through-the-fence properties. They're directly associated with it. But if you look at what they do is they bring in family wage-paying jobs, and that's a big plus. So the last thing I'd leave you with is there's also hobby aviation and flight training. There needs to be airports associated with the metropolitan airports to keep those businesses alive. Hillsborough Aviation is one of the major trainers of pilots, not just in this region, but throughout especially the Asian market. A lot of people come to the United States to learn to train and learn to fly. If there are ancillary airports they can go to, like Baker or Madras or Bend, where they can land and take a break, get fuel, and get back in the aircraft and go back to their primary training airport, that enhances the whole infrastructure system. So I guess I'm a pilot, I'm sorry and I apologize, I'm recovering, but from my point of view, it makes sense to support the bill, because despite what you hear, I haven't been up there lately, but the sky's not falling. And
do you think there's objections to the folks on the airport from being annexed eventually if the city wanted to do that as part of the deal?
I don't think so, because and I can't speak for everybody at the airport, and that's not what I'm here to do. But I believe in my heart, if I, as a businessman, am getting the benefit of services, I need to pay for them. And I know that my company and the guy that I work for, Don Wilson, he will participate. And because we want to pay our own way. At the same time, there might be others on the airport that don't want to. And I can't speak for them.
Okay, questions. I want to ask some Madras questions too. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, I heard, I think all three of you mentioned either shovel ready or site ready key interests in this bill. And Mr. Mayor, Mayor M. Banks, I heard you say that this bill will make the airport shovel-ready. Can you explain to us how it makes it shovel-ready?
By shovel-ready in the sense that we already have an area where they're using. So, and they're aware of, first of all, they're aware of us and we're aware of them, and we've had business with them for some time. So it makes it easier. We trust them, they trust us, they know what they're getting, we know what we're getting.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up.
We heard a great deal of testimony from the city of Wilsonville that they have an inability to fund adequate infrastructure out to the airport. So I guess one choice would be that they don't have to partake in extending that infrastructure, number one. But would there be any creative ways that potential growth could be used to fund infrastructure?
Yes.
I just want to make sure that our map's clear. That this intended development would be opening shop right next to our plant, so this is going to be very cost-effective for them as well.
I understand.
And And so the burden upon them and the city is low in this circumstance. But in other circumstances, our water district, that we Deschutes Valley Water District, we've been in contact with them, and they got to extend a water main out to them out in the middle of that airfield area that's outside the runways area. It's a available zone to lease and use that's not part of the airport master plan. And they'll have to pay for that. So when the infrastructure, when we permit them, they'll have hookup fees. And they will have also the development costs for access and the extension of those utilities. So those, when they pencil out the land use costs, the development site fees, they're looking at the whole package, including all fees. They've penciled in extending utilities to themselves. So the development is well aware of paying their way and paying their fair share. They've taken that into account in their site assessment.
I want to be very clear. You said they will pay. They being who?
The private development.
Thank you very much.
Okay, other questions? And I just want to make sure I understand. I'm looking at the map. So this existing wastewater treatment plant is built outside the UGB?
Yes.
Which is probably another thing that you don't really want to have inside UGBs if you can help it, because they're, exactly. They smell. So so the way that you currently, under current law, could use your authority ends basically without taking an exception on the black line that borders on this map. So you could go outside your city, but only if it's in within the UGB, and there is no such area here where it sounds like you're already annexed all the way out to your UGB.
That's correct. That black line is the city limits and urban growth boundary, the black shown on our map.
And so this would allow you to essentially, without answering the annexation question now, get services out there to expand development, so then you could take your time and figure it, out.
The shovel ready is the plants there. It's
because you have to, as much as we like to say it's only local control, you're still going to have to convince LCDC to approve your urban growth boundary expansion.
Right.
What you're saying is your initial feedback is the entire property you own outside might not be okay with them to do all of it in one big UGB expansion.
Yeah. Any land that's not designated for the runways and the reserve areas and runway protection end zones and taxiways, if we come in and say there's 1,000 developable acres outside of those, they then have you go through a findings process, say, well, how much do you need? And they look at some of your past history development and stuff like that. What's odd for us is we've never permitted a 100-acre lease. That will be the largest leaseholder there. So how do you make yourself ready? We didn't anticipate needing 100 acres, so we're going to do a UGB expansion on our past history, but here we got one that blows that out of the water. So we're not really prepared doing that UGB amendment process. It's looking at past data, and we're in transformation as a Central Oregon region. There's just a lot of growth to the region.
And did you look at using the exceptions process to try and do the facility running?
We have looked at that. We went out and did some test samples, and, of course, the samples come back. As those farmers out there on septics, well, the soil could handle a septic system. But we're sitting here going, that doesn't make any sense in our planning here to start sending industrial users into our or aeronautical users. They're a test facility. They need a big footprint. Frankly, there's not enough acreage left within our urban growth boundary in industrial zone to fit that test track into. So we got a real problem from a land availability perspective. They've been using the test track. So what we did with the county is they have an airport management zone with conditional uses in it, and they're very specific to ones that are out there or ones that would work cooperatively with an airport and not. We have FAA grant assurances that we won't risk that always being an airport. So it has to fall in line with those things. But tied back to FAA wants to see development on their airports. They understand that we have to support the operations of those. They understand that they're pushing down a local cost share to rebuild the runways every 20 to 25 years. And so they have guidelines completely laid out for industrial development on those extra places on these airports. So it falls in line with their policies and our grant assurances that we've agreed to with the Federal Aviation Administration.
Okay. Any more questions for these gentlemen? Okay, great. Thank you. And I
believe I may have someone here on the home baking bread bill who came from Tillamook. Is that true? I don't have you on my list, or at least I didn't know you were from so far away. So would you like to come up and tell us your feelings about that bill, because since you drove all the way over here? Then we'll come back to the airport. So let me temporarily close the public hearing on Senate Bill 534, reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 320A. And if you'll just tell us your name and then your feelings about the bill, we'll not feel bad that you drove all the way over here just to sit and listen to airport talk.
No problem. Good afternoon, members of the committee and Chairman Clem. My name is Nancy Nagel, and I'm here from Neskowin. Which is in Tillamook County, and I am here as a board member of the Neskowin Farmers Market. I've owned a catering company in Portland for 20 years, and I still own my business house there that has two commercial kitchens. And some of the time, these are leased out to small companies that need just a kitchen, a commercial kitchen space for a day or two a week to produce their food for the farmers market on the weekend. There are many other options for this type of shared use kitchens in the Portland metro area, but that's not the case in Tillamook County. Tillamook County area does not provide any kind of commercial kitchens, and the SB 320 would provide home bakers the opportunity to earn supplemental income through production of high quality baked goods on a small scale in their own kitchens. Once the baked goods are produced, the Tillamook County farmers markets are a great sort of venue for the products that are sold, which in turn provide small communities like Neskowin and Pacific City locally made breads and desserts. Thank you.
Any questions? Great. Thank you for coming over. Okay. I'm going to go back over to our other bill now and close Senate Bill 320A.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Before you do close the public hearing, I'm going to have to scoot in a couple of minutes for another commitment. But I'm really pleased with 320 as it's come across to us. I mean, what we have is micro businesses that become small businesses, and some of those become large businesses. But what we're really doing is providing an awful lot of opportunity for an awful lot of folks that wouldn't otherwise have it. I just wanted to get that in the record as part of the hearing before I had to go.
Okay, great. Thank you, Representative. Okay, so now let me close the hearing on Senate Bill 320, reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 534, and ask Ben Williams, Greg Taylor, and C.K. Patterson come up. Please, Ben, go ahead.
Representative Clem, members of the Rural Communities Committee, I'm Ben Williams, president of Friends of French Prairie and a resident of Aurora. Thank you for the opportunity to testify against Senate Bill 534. For those of you that don't know, Friends of French Prairie is a land use advocacy organization in Oregon's agricultural and historical heartland. Most Oregonians underappreciate this fact, thus the educational booklet that I earlier gave to Lindsay for distribution, which I encourage you to spend a few minutes at some point taking a look at. The Center of Oregon History and Oregon Agriculture is in French Prairie. I won't read my previously submitted testimony, but I will take the opportunity to make a few points. And must say, like Commissioner Lehan, or Councilor Lehan, I find myself struggling with cognitive dissonance over the last hour and a half, and I've marked up most of my comments as I listen to the proponents alternate between this is a very simple, permissive bill to improve toilets and water on airports. But as their comments continued, what leaked out was commentary about growth and industrialization. Those two positions seem relatively in opposition to me. So our opposition to this bill stems from the fact that what it tries to accomplish, namely the provision of urban services to airports, is allowable under existing laws, as has been said many times. And so the bill seeks to create really nothing more than a fast-track solution for what is already available. As Mayor Knapp's testimony and the proposed amendments from the city of Wilsonville point out, there are at least three major problems inherent in the bill that are not addressed by its brevity and simplicity, and that is who pays, what happens to farmland, and the question of municipal governance. So I would remind you that these are urban services, and the comments that leaked out about industrialization and growth reinforce the fact that urban services drive development. It's a simple reality. And the scope of the bill is statewide. And although we tend to think of Oregon as replete with farmland because we live in the Willamette Valley, most of us, and think of it as a robust economic sector, let me share some facts about agriculture in Oregon and why we're so passionate about it. Oregon contains 62.9 million acres of land. It's a big state. Of that, only 16.4 million are in agriculture. That's 26%. Only 4.6 million acres are high-value farmland. Now we're down to 7.3%. And of that, only 1.2 million acres are considered prime farmland. That's 1.9%. So in the written testimony I submitted, I included this map from the University of Oregon, which shows the amount of high-value farmland. It's a very, very small amount. It's a resource that has to be protected. And 40% of that high-value farmland and 78% of the prime farmland is likewise in the Willamette Valley. The vast majority is in the Willamette Valley, where, coincidentally, the Aurora Airport is located. Also in my written testimony, I submitted this map of the Aurora Airport. Early proponent testimony was about how the FAA controls airport expansion, and you remember Senator Johnson saying that there's no spillover to take farmland. This belies the statement, because there are two triangles at the south end of the runway. The first triangle is a 30-acre requirement on the part of ODA to buy EFU farmland to lengthen the runway. The red triangle is another 50 or 60 acres that functionally is taken out of production to extend the runway safety zone. The simple fact of lengthening the runway at the Aurora Airport will take at least 100 acres out of production and set up the adjoining land between the south end of the airport and the city of Aurora for some kind of aviation-related commercial or industrial development. So we urge you to vote no against this and think about protecting the farmland resource that we have and we will need to ever a greater degree going forward. Thank you.
Greg?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Clem and the remaining members of the committee. My name is Gregory Taylor. I'm a 45-year resident of the city of Aurora. I have served on the Planning Commission. I served 6 years as a city councilor, and I have also served as mayor. I don't think there's anybody at present that knows more about the infrastructure and financial and operational methods of the city of Aurora. I do come here today in opposition to Bill 534. In the last several months, five or six bills have come before this session specifically designed for this area. Now, this bill is specific to the airport, but these bills have all come in. Some have died in committee already, but there is a definite program and agenda with regard to the development of this area and the land north of the airport, commonly known as Langdon Farms. First, let me say that I'm not opposed to providing water and sewer to the airport. In the 25, 30 years that I have watched the airport grow on its septic system, and it has grown significantly, yes, they are in a position of where they have a problem. Where I do oppose is the lack of the ability to annex them immediately prior to do this. for us to provide services to the airport, if we could do this, if we could logistically and capacity-wise do this, we would have to enter into a contract with the airport. The proponents of this bill have given a number of issues of why it should be good. One is that it will solve their septic and water issues that they have, that there will be a increase in development because you now have infrastructure services there. This will create jobs, and that income will spread to the other communities, and the city will be able to garnish a revenue stream from selling those services. In many of these issues, they are correct. Providing infrastructure to the Aurora will solve their septic and water issues. Obviously, anytime that you bring infrastructure into an area, you're going to see an immediate uptick in growth and development with regard to light industrial and major commercial areas that would work around an airport. This will happen. You will see over the next few years that once that's in there, the small pilot concept that Aurora has been for so long will get pushed out of the way. Old hangars will come down and new development structures and businesses will step in. That will create jobs and a revenue stream into the airport. However, I can tell you with regard to the Aurora, which is what I'm speaking of, there's a myriad of issues for opposition, but mine is strictly with regard to the effect it'll have on the city of Aurora. Less than 5% of the people that work at the airport right now live in the city of Aurora. Probably do not even have an Aurora zip code. Consequently, the amount of money does not come into the city of Aurora. Everybody that works there lives somewhere else, transports somewhere else. That money goes elsewhere. So it's not necessarily an economic benefit for the city of Aurora. We would like it to be, but it's not. With regard to the revenue of selling water and sewer to them, even if the airport, and if you can get a consensus of them people, then you're a miracle worker. But even if the airport paid 100% of the construction costs, the daily operation, the increase in our ability to handle that operation, maintenance and repair, and we were to charge them double the fee that we charge people in town, we would basically end up only being their maintenance people. The revenue stream would not be that significant to the city of Aurora unless we were able to annex. Annex would give the city of Aurora the one thing that it does not have, and it's the only community at this end of the valley that doesn't have it, and that's a light industrial area. Donald has one, Hubbard has one, Canby has one, Woodburn has it. They have been financial benefits. I have shouted from the rooftops that that is something, and in the direction of the airport is where we needed to look to secure that kind of tax base for our city in order to help us continue our operations. It has fallen fairly on deaf ears as Aurora has a history of non-growth concepts. But it's what would happen. We would be able to assess and tax an already developed site at those rates. We can put together a five-year plan of saying from 3 to 5 years we will have water and sewer at the airport. That gives us time to gather money from that tax base. Once we're there, hookup is mandatory. We'd be able to charge SDCs, we'd be able to charge service fees, but probably the most important thing that concerns me with regard to Aurora is that any development would have to go through our permit and planning process, where we could say how, where, why, and what's going to go in there and protect not only oversee the development of that land at the airport, but protect the lands around it that we don't want developed, to keep that buffer between that industrial area and our historic community, which is one of the assets of the North Willamette Valley. Now, that is probably not capable of being done under the current land use laws. If you were to be able to write a bill, I would say push a bill that says a municipality, under certain circumstances and defined parameters, can and only can annex an entity that is outside its city limits and outside its urban growth boundary with the intent of providing public services for them. If you can do that one, if you can do 534, you can do that one. But I don't think either of them are applicable to our land use laws that we have today. A great deal has been said about this being a passive bill. You may, you can, but read the title of the bill. And the end of it says, related to the provision of city services to an airport and declaring an act of emergency. Section 2 says, the act being necessary for the immediate preservation of the public peace, health, and safety, an emergency is declared to exist, and this 2015 act takes effect on its passage. The minute you declare an act of emergency, you go from may and can to you have to.
Not here at the legislature, actually. It's more, it just makes it take effect more quickly. That's the effect of an emergency clause in our
Well, there is the potential of saying that we have a health emergency up there. Aurora, you are the nearest entity. We need you to comply.
I think the DEQ does have authority to do emergency mm-hmm. annexations, but I can tell you it's not because of that clause. They already have it in another portion.
Well,
of the law.
It would put the concept front and center.
Yeah.
And that can happen. We probably can, right at this point, not barring a water drought emergency through the rest of the summer, we probably can comply. We probably could accommodate the airport. However, in the next few years, we are going to build out our residential land reserve, our usable land inventory of residential. That we're not very far from doing that. Not very far from the commercial. When those are built out, we will be maxed out in services. And that will require a major upgrade to our sewer plant, the investment in water resources and distribution, wells, reservoirs, and lines, and acquire the property to do it, and water rights. If we are tied into the airport with a contract, and the contract will be for usage. And you can write the contracts any way you want to, but contracts are made to be broken, and they're fragile. And this one, as complex as the logistics that is there, would be a very fragile one at best. When it comes time to do that upgrade, when it comes time to reinvest, the airport's going to stop there at the property line and say, well, we just pay for usage. We're not going to come up with the millions or the bond for you to improve your infrastructure. Now, Aurora only has 450-some units right now. That is our tax base, residential and commercial units. We have 15 years left on our sewer bond. We have 16 years left on our loan for our filtration plant. We can't absorb that kind of financial burden until those are resolved. So there's the great possibility that even if we wanted to, without annexation, to give us some tax revenue, to give us a money base to help us approach this, that it's probably a done deal.
And I'm going to come back to you with a question, okay. But let's get this gentleman's testimony. This is
Patterson, Charles Patterson,
yes.
Representative
yeah.
Clem, Chairman Clem. I live in Wilsonville, just 2 miles off the end of the Aurora Airport runway, which has grown steadily throughout the 20 years I've lived there. And it's been over 2 years since I filed a noise complaint. I'm not here to complain about the airport. Listening to the testimony today, and having done about 20 years service, community service in industrial development in the city of Lebanon and in Pendleton, Oregon, listening to the testimony from Madras and the others, I just darn near wanted to jump up and say, get her done! Because small, truly rural communities have suffered immensely in their economic development efforts by restrictions that we always had to point at Portland and the Willamette Valley and say laws made for those people are really screwing up our economic development opportunities. And there was a lot of truth in it. So you have
I think, an enormously difficult task, and it doesn't involve passing 534. The task is to find ways to accommodate what Madras is trying to do, what Pendleton is finally getting a chance to do, and not at the same time destroy the work that's been done. I've personally been involved for at least 10, and I think closer to 12 years in the combat we've had virtually hand to hand to establish and maintain urban growth boundaries. And then beyond that, when the hand to hand became more heavy weapons, we had to invent rural reserves and urban reserves. And we trudged along for years and years through public meetings in the most democratic possible process to establish a solution. And what this simple legislation does to this marvelous structure we've put over the Portland metropolitan area, which doesn't include any of the other areas, but is the complex core of growth. We put this structure over it to try to protect the rural areas. Starts right at my outside my house. I live on the urban growth boundary, and the rural reserve extends from my house out to the end of the airport. That's supposed to be preserved for 50 years. And here we have, sponsored by developers, speculators who've told me and others in this room face to face, they bought Langdon Farms knowing it was land use, exclusively farm zone, and that they would simply change it to industrial zone and build an industrial park. And there's a lot of money involved. This would be like building, if you just pass this as is without at minimum the amendments requested by Wilsonville, this would be like building a six-lane freeway from my house out to the airport and not and actually believing there would not be other developments grow out of that traffic. Those things lead to industry, they lead to housing developments, they lead to all kinds of developments, and there's no way to stop it. This would construct vital services right beside Langdon Farms for a full mile, services that are essential to their growth, that the state says we can't afford, the city says we can't afford, the county, which kind of likes your idea, doesn't have to come up with a damn dime to pay for it. We in Wilsonville are struggling now to find the funds to replace aging 40-year-old sewer and water systems in the ground and at the same time come up with infrastructure costs to serve large industrial tracts that are inside the new urban growth boundary, inside the rural and the urban growth boundary. And all of this has been planned and established, and this would punch through and let the air out of the rural reserves, urban reserves process in an instant. And it's politics. You guys wouldn't be doing this. You wouldn't cause all that. But it would take a change of only two votes on the Wilsonville City Council to say, oh, that's a good idea, let's do it. We'll just charge our local taxpayers more money to pay for all that infrastructure. Please, if you're going to do it, if you feel politically this is necessary, Wilsonville has asked quite reasonably for three amendments if you pass this destructive land use policy change. Please at least extend the courtesy of those amendments to the people getting stuck with the mess and the payments. Thank you.
Any questions for these gentlemen? So my question for the gentleman in the middle, the former mayor and planning commissioner, is it, I heard Senator Girard talking about the preserving of farmland in between, but would there not be a tool to cherry stem annex down the road and just annex the airport?
Yes, that would be, that is an option. The process we would have to go through and the cost I can't speak to right now, but yes, there is, and it's been I've discussed it anyway, that there is a possibility to cherry stem a utility easement to the edge of the airport property. I would like to
still either have to have a cool exception or a bill like this. But
well, there's the possibility of we can annex to a certain degree right up to that easement if we own the easement, and we're now we are the city limits is now adjacent to the property of the airport. Then you have that. Of course, one of the reasons that I believe that the annexation exemption is in this bill is because Aurora has voter annexation. And we're notorious for not looking at expansion. But that concept's going to have to change eventually because development and growth do happen. Mm-hmm. They are going to happen. If we don't control this, though they say there's not going to be a sprawl of development, the over-the-fence developments that have already occurred prove that there can be an exception to that. And there is a buffer between us. We'd like to keep it like that. Mm-hmm. But, yes, I believe that is an option and a possibility for us to look to do that. We would need some help. We would need some from Marion County, LCDC, the state, to help us traverse that course. But, yes, that is a definite possibility to do that.
Mr. Chair.
I'm Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Taylor, first of all, thank you for being here, and I have a lot of respect for your understanding of that interesting community called Aurora. It feels like, and if I'm wrong, you can tell me, it feels like that the basic attitude is the airport is dead weight. The Aurora airport is dead weight to the city of Aurora unless we can annex it and do the things that you lined out. I think
you know, the concept over the last probably 10 years has changed somewhat, but not a lot. We do want to have a working relationship with the airport. It's a necessity. It's been there forever. It is going to grow. It is developing. We see it happen all the time. But yes, that unless I think we're more concerned of the lack of our ability to control or to have a say in how that so close development expands. We would like to be able to have more than just, well, we don't like it, or yes, we do like it. The planning process gives us that. But yes, I would think in general, there is not a lot of favoritism to the airport without some kind of involvement that benefits the city. And I'm afraid that just selling them services, that the general feeling is that we're standing there bent over saying, please, sir, may I have another?
Mr. Chair, we can talk about this more, and I'm interested in your...
It's just the Animal House reference, I think. I'm not sure where that came from. But yeah.
Cherry stem idea. But my understanding is that one of the specific intentions here was merely to put the possibility of putting water across farmland, not taking farmland.
Right.
Now, I understand some of these fears of development that have been expressed. I don't share them, but I understand it. But as I understand it, under the bill, we're trying very hard not to take any farmland by what this bill would do at Aurora or other airports around the state.
Essentially, the bill would allow you... So there's a couple different ways to get to the airport and annex it. One is annex everything in between and then annex it, yeah. And that's the part that would take the farmland in between that I think the senator is referring to. The other is pass a bill that allows you to put the services there without a requirement for annexation. Then there's no risk you're going to get anything in between. But there's a governance and tax and other related issues that isn't just here. We have other bills that have asked for services without annexation. And often, I did not realize it until you spoke, sir, but often they're aimed at trying to get around voter approval of annexations. The other bills are as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably more what this is about, actually. Although in the case, unless we not withstood the charter of Aurora, you still, as long as you had the ability to annex, you still would have the voter approval, whether you liked it or not. You're stuck with that for the moment. So I think the other way to not impact by annexation and urban growth boundary expansion the land in between Aurora and the airport is to use the exceptions process to apply for an exception to be able to put pipes either down the road or through the other property, and then you would have the same outcome. This is just faster. Maybe. If the bill passes, it's faster. If the bill dies, it would be faster to go through the exceptions process. So I hope that...
Yeah, and we can talk about it further, but I know you want to move on to the next panel. I had to step out before Mr. Williams started speaking, and I don't know if he offered the copy of his lovely op-ed in the Oregonian. But if he did not offer it, I'm going to ask the administrator to make sure that every member get it so that people can read about me and the other wastrels of the land.
We'll make sure we get a copy.
Make a comment. It goes back to Representative Gilliam's question about dead weight. And thank you for bringing up the op-ed.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we know you're not one of the wastrels, Representative Gilliam. But to your question about dead weight, what Mr. Taylor didn't say, but I think is really important to understand, is while this bill, as it has had life, has had more and more other state airports raise their hand and say there is benefit here for us, Madras being a living example today. It has been going on, the discussion around this bill and the Aurora Airport have been going on for 6 to 9 months. At the last Aurora City Council meeting, the mayor pointed out when the discussion was going on relative to sending an opposition letter to this bill that not once has a single representative from the Aurora Airport come to the city of Aurora to discuss the matter with the city in either a planning commission meeting or a city council meeting. I think that's a rather telling observation. I wouldn't characterize it as dead weight, but there certainly is not any level of collegiality or the kind of communication you would expect to be happening if one entity accepts services to be provided by another.
To be honest, I'm not really clear if there's any representatives of the Aurora Airport here either. So I'm not sure exactly who represents. I mean, I know you have a business on it, but in terms of the airport itself, the state, are you from the?
I'm the state airport manager for the
airport. There we go. Yeah. Are you going to be testifying? Or you just, no? See, at some point we probably would like to know what the state thinks about it since they own the airport and whether they think there should be services there, but we may call you up whether you like it or not one of these days.
I think there should be a clarification. When we talk about the airport, the state only owns the runway, the taxiways, and a couple of hangars. The rest of it is private property.
Right, yeah.
So now we're talking about any kind of development, even though you would like it to be airport-related. I know for a fact there are businesses up there that are occupied on that property that are not airport-related, and that's still a potential with regard to that. Now, that's not necessarily a concern of mine, but we are talking about private property. We are talking about standard development and growth.
Yeah. Okay, I've got some more people I need to get to. Any more for these three?
Thank you.
Okay, great, thanks. So I've got then Tony Holt, Mary Kyle McCurdy, and Stephen Kafoor. And we've got two more after that. Just you and me. Do you want to come? Are you happy where you're at? Or?
I'm just fearful you're going to leave and I'm going to chair.
Is there someone? Why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Tony.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Clem and members of the committee. My name is Tony Holt, and I live in Wilsonville. It seems to me there's been an awful lot of things said here and some on the fringes of what we're talking about. And I'd just like to read the first part of my testimony, which I said, I'm sure we all realize by now that this bill is not about getting water and sewer to airports. That can be done now. It's about avoiding annexation or municipal governance. And I'm saying if you're going to support it, then surrounding cities, citizens, and taxpayers need some protection. And I'm just amazed that from the proponents that we seem to have gone through jobs and a whole variety of issues. But when I think when it really comes down to it, it's a question of annexation or not. And I have some familiarity with the Aurora Airport. I'm a community member of the Positive Aurora Airport Management Committee, PAM. I also was on the Policy Advisory Committee for the last master plan update, which was mentioned, I think, by Senator Johnson and also by Ben Williams. In that master plan, just an indication, the Oregon Department of Aviation actually recommended there be no extension, runway extension to the airport at all. That was overruled by somebody, I assume, in the aviation board, without any kind of municipal or community involvement at all. 1,000-foot runway to the south, and as Ben Williams mentioned, picking up probably 50 or many more acres of prime agricultural land. The other problem, and I think it speaks to municipal governments, is you may know there's an intergovernmental agreement, an IGA, at Aurora Airport between the county, Marion County, ODA, Department of Aviation, and the city of Aurora. And it has an impact map, an airport impact map, attached to that agreement. And lo and behold, the edge of the impact zone to the north is actually on the edge of the airport. It's the airport fence, which happens to be Arden Road, which happens to be the division between Clackamas County and Marion County. That's the northern end of the impact of Aurora Airport. The other situation is that neither Wilsonville, and the edge of Wilsonville, as Mr. Patterson said, is something like 2 miles from the end of the runway. Neither Wilsonville nor Clackamas County are not allowed within this IGA, which talks about discussing and consulting on development at the airport. So I would stress again that the problem here is municipal governance. And if the water and the sewer are given to the airport, there needs to be some responsibility for municipal governance. And I do believe that the amendments, if you are going to pass the bill to provide water, then there needs to be coverage of those amendments, which basically talk about restricting the development, as we mentioned, the extension of the runway, protecting the taxpayers of Wilsonville, Canby, Aurora, wherever, that they will not be paying for these services. And then this idea that the communities that are surrounding the airport, who are affected by the airport, I mean, the planes, I'm 2 miles away, 2.5 miles away from the airport, there are overflights of my house many, many times a day. These are the people that are being affected by the airport. There should be some say. The communities within 3 mile radius is what the amendment says. That only seems reasonable to me. So if you are going to pass it, I do ask that you pass it with those amendments. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Cal.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem and member of the committee. Thank you both for staying. Mary Kyle McCurdy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon. I have lots of scrawls all over my testimony because the longer that I've sat here, the more unclear it seems to me exactly what this bill states. Chair Clem has mentioned a variety or several of the vague points of the bill itself and what the objectives of the bill are. And it seems to me there are at least three different instances being described here. One are those current airports that maybe should eventually be annexed into a city, and perhaps Madras sounds like it meets that. Maybe Aurora, but there doesn't seem to be a consensus locally as to that. And it appears that the bill does not allow an agreement to provide sewer and water that also requires eventual annexation into the city. And therefore, it doesn't really seem to meet those needs of those cities for which it might make sense for an airport to eventually be annexed into it. There's also been discussion about airports that maybe should not be annexed into a city for a variety of reasons, the farmland in between, they're too distant, et cetera. That's a different kettle of fish that don't seem to be addressed here, and where the concern is non-airport related industrial development that is occurring and can occur in the future at those airports, particularly if urban sewer and water and other services are provided to those airports. That might be part of what's going on here, desire to expand those uses without annexation or municipal government. As you've heard testimony from many before me, cities plan and finance the full suite of services that are needed for industrial development: roads, sewers, water, stormwater, utilities, fire, police protection. And that, of course, makes those lands within cities more expensive to develop because they have, or to purchase because they have that infrastructure in place. And some of the what I've been hearing this afternoon seems to be about allowing that type of industrial development to occur on rural land, which is frankly just cheaper because it doesn't have all that investment in it yet, or it may be subsidized by cities through this extension of services without annexation. And it allows unfair competition between the rural industrial development, urban-like industrial development in rural areas, and as opposed to within cities that have already provided that infrastructure. And it also doesn't take into account the other things, the impacts in rural areas that can occur from turning these airports into the job center. Someone already described this kind of two-headed descriptions that we've heard about. Are these supposed to become job centers or not? We've heard a lot about the types of developments that can and should go on at airports, and they can go on now. Those are the ones that require runways, whether they're retrofitting helicopters, they're providing rescue operations, health flights, flight training, through the fence type operations. But we've also heard there's quite a bit of development that could go on or is going on in airport industrial areas. And that's what we're concerned about, the way the potential that this bill may have an impact on the ability for further urban-like industrial development at airports that's not airport-related if sewer and water services are provided. There are several amendments that I know have been put forth to the committee that would address some of these, requiring the ability or providing the ability to require eventual annexation and to prohibit hookups along the way for the sewer and water lines, and also to limit those to those industries that are related to the airport. I believe there may be one or two other amendments I've heard talked about today that may be before you. Those seem to me the type of things that should be considered if you're going to go forward with this bill. But I do say, you know, we do have a current tool in land use laws that has not been used at the Aurora Airport, and I don't know if it's been attempted in any of the other airports, and that is the exception process. An exception process to run needed urban and services to an airport requires that you prove that you actually need the water and sewer for the airport use, and that it's limited to that use, and you can prohibit uses along the line. We hear complaints that the exceptions process must be too burdensome, but no one has actually tried it, and it's exactly those considerations that it takes into account. It allows things like water and sewer services to be provided outside urban areas if they are needed, and airport-related uses outside of an urban areas are a very good example of where that could be shown to be needed if sewer and water hookups are needed for airport development. And yet that has not been done in Aurora, and I don't know if it's been done anywhere else. Madras seems to be in a different situation, being adjacent to a city and not needing to run through farmland. So I'm just going to close by saying I think we've heard a variety of different outcomes intended for this bill, and the bill is not clearly written, it seems to me, to address just what it is we're trying to get at in this bill. Thank you.
And Stephen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Cafori. I'm here representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. Land use planners generally take, when we testify at the legislature, are interested in more broad philosophical views rather than the specifics of one airport or another. We don't think this is a good bill. If you do decide that you need to pass it, as was said earlier, we would like the Wilsonville amendments, the three amendments put on it. But our option, our best option would be to not pass the bill at all. We basically think there's no need for the legislation. There are, as you just heard from Mary Kyle and from other people, there are options. If somebody thinks that they need to run sewer and water out to an airport, there are ways to do it within existing land use law without creating another exception to what we have now. We also are concerned about the effects on farmland of, and you, again, you've heard this from other people. I don't want to be redundant. I have written testimony. So we, bottom line is we don't like the bill. Adopt amendments if you think you must have the bill. But there's no need for it. It doesn't add anything but another way to solve a problem that can be solved by existing law.
Questions? Maybe just one. Do you think it was intentional that all these airports ended up outside UGBs on purpose and then the cities grew towards them, or is it hit or miss? Because I don't know enough about the original theory of land use planning to know where airports were supposed to be.
Mr. Chair, members
of the
committee.
Did they all exist before 73?
These airports were put in a long time before 1973.
I'm sure Ralph could tell us. He carried the bill. But.
Came out of my committee, Mr. Chair.
Oh, yeah. We got two of the three here. Okay. Nothing else for the moment? Great. Thank you. And Mary Ann, do you want to help? And Ken? We're going to have a mixed panel here of unknown position and in favor, so no bopping each other. Well, you can put a seat together in case there was about to be a scuffle. I don't know. I don't know where Farm Bureau is at.
We don't look too feisty today.
Yeah. Well,
Representative Vest indicated she could be violent, so I'll keep a little space.
Okay. Please.
Chair Klim, members of the committee, my name is Mary Ann Nash, here today with the Oregon Farm Bureau. While we understand the importance of rural airports to the counties in which they are located, we have some concerns about the potential for this bill to impact farmland. And we have been, as you heard, in discussions with several of the legislators to better understand the bill and see if there's any room for discussion around it. There's three main concerns that we've identified. The first that I actually don't think I've heard anybody touch on is the concern that when you do locate these lines out to airport areas, and particularly where there's farmland in between, the condemnation process associated with these types of corridors has been a problem for our members. But I think, you know, it, to the extent it can be cited in existing right-of-ways, that may be able to be resolved. And then the concerns you've heard now several times about that creating kind of a development corridor and pressure for additional development along those lines that otherwise wouldn't exist without the provision of services out to the airports. And then also the concerns about expansion of airports. And that's one that I have to confess. I've tried to look into the mechanism around it and haven't found a terribly clear answer about how this bill interacts with the existing process and what the existing process is. So that is certainly something, as we discuss amendments, that I will work to better educate myself on moving forward. So with that, I think because you've heard several other folks testify on these issues, I won't take up any more of your time, but I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Yeah, something just dawned on me, and I might have to have somebody else come back up if you don't want to answer it, but if somebody were to apply for an exception, who would it be?
That would apply?
Yeah.
Does anybody?
Because the airport isn't one entity, really. It's a whole bunch of property owners.
I'd like to ask the audience.
Yeah. Mary Kyle or... Like we've talked about, they could use the exceptions process. Who is they? Because the airport isn't a monolithic entity, except for this gentleman could maybe apply. But
Chair Klem, members of the committee, I think that illustrates who is it benefiting, the airport or the industrial users around it. The airport must be an entity. I mean, it obviously at some point considered expanding its runway. There's an airport entity.
There is a state airport.
Therefore, it would apply for the exception if the airport and its immediate uses needed water and or sewer or any other urban use for which it needed an exception. The other industrial developer developments around it, presumably if they're an industrial park, the industrial park owner would apply, would be one.
And would they all have to apply if you were even going from, I mean, if you're not now annexed and you're just extending services out to an applicant, when you go to the next parcel owner over, wouldn't they have to go through the exceptions process to get it to go the next little bit, and then the next person would as well? Because you're no longer in a...
You'd probably do an LID.
Yeah.
That's how it would happen in a city. There would be a local improvement district, and the property owners, yes, would have to get together in some coordinated fashion and commit to funding the infrastructure.
That would be my guess.
That was Charlotte Lehan talking from the audience for the record. Sorry.
I was looking to someone who had actually been a county commissioner and might have dealt with exceptions for guidance, because that's what my guess would have been. And therefore, I was looking at Commissioner, former Commissioner Lehan, because I would think you would organize yourselves into an entity that could then, on behalf of all of the landowners, apply.
And Chair Clem, to add a little bit to that, and I actually not sure how helpful this is, but what I did find when I was looking into it is 836.616, ORS 836.616 talks about rules for airport uses and activities, and gives certain issue, certain kind of types of uses that are largely airport related, that are the, it says local government land use regulations shall authorize the following uses, and those are largely airport related. And then other land uses, commercial, industrial, and other uses are allowed where they're consistent with the plan. And to me, that suggests that the entity that is seeking, for example, the new industrial area, the new commercial area, would be the one saying, I want to do this, you know, is it, and saying, showing that it's consistent with the acknowledged comprehensive plan, statewide planning goals, and commission rules. But that's where, and particularly when I was talking to Senator Johnson about how that interacts with the FAA process, I just haven't figured that out yet, and will continue to work with those that are more knowledgeable about it than myself to try to figure out what that looks like in terms of the ability of airports to expand beyond their boundaries.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to research. But given the bill also refers to a city and an airport, not people who are on airports, but an airport, I assume it's this gentleman who would, the agreement would have to be between Wilsonville or Aurora and them anyway. So I'm guessing the state airport is who we need to discuss a little bit with that portion. But I forgot to take Ken's testimony before I got back into questions, and usually I finish the panel. So were you done?
I am done.
Okay, let's have Ken's testimony.
Thank you, Chair Clinton.
I've safely now avoided my 3 o'clock meeting, which is no offense to them, but great.
I have your message about brevity.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Clem. Member of the committee, for the record, my name is Ken Hector. I am from Silverton. In the interest of full disclosure, I should note that I am employed part-time as a legislative advisor for Representative Gilliam. However, I am here today on my own time, speaking only for myself. By way of background, I am serving my 25th year on the Silverton City Council, including 16 years as mayor. Again, my remarks today are my own, and I do not speak for the city or the council. Silverton has had an on-again, off-again airport since the 1930s. It is no longer active, now a privately owned airstrip, located just west of town, bordered on the west by commercial, industrial properties and businesses, and on the east and north by EFU land. One of the businesses served by city water, and all are on septic systems. Airports have long demonstrated their value as economic drivers. The beauty of Senate Bill 534 is that, unlike much legislation that imposes mandates on local government, this bill does not. Rather, it affords economic and environmental opportunities for cities. Senate Bill 534 simply allows the city to provide water and/or sewers to a nearby airport without requiring annexation or consent to eventual annexation. The key language is found in Section 1, Line 4 of the bill, and I quote, "A city and an airport may enter into an agreement," end quote. Thus, the city is completely free to avail itself of this opportunity or not.
If it is interested in providing these services, if it is not interested in providing these services, nothing is required of the city. However, if a city is interested in exploring the option or in providing services, it is well positioned to set the terms of the agreement. If the airport finds the terms offered by the city unacceptable, the city is not obligated by the bill to negotiate. So essentially, it puts the city absolutely in the driver's seat. City is in the position to simply say, you want water and or sewer, I've got it. Here's the conditions, from paying for all the infrastructure, all the operations and maintenance, replacement of infrastructure down the road. The city sets the conditions. It's as simple as that. While both a city and an airport stand to benefit from a service agreement, there are also other potential benefits, including public and environmental safety. Public safety is enhanced with the use of city water and sanitary sewer, and the environmental impact on groundwater depletion is reduced by the use of city-provided water. Finally, I've heard a lot of concerns expressed that passage of this bill would threaten EFU land. Nothing in this bill alters the safeguards for EFU lands contained in current land use law. Any attempt by either an airport or a city to encroach on EFU land would require the applicant to submit to the full zoning process and land use process. In addition, most cities could provide these services utilizing either existing road right-of-way, or where that would be impractical, the infrastructure could go under the EFU land, thereby not diminishing its use, and that's a relatively common practice today. We've heard a lot of extraneous discussion about Aurora, Wilsonville, Canby. Again, I think it's important to remember that we're talking about a bill that would have statewide impact, and every municipality near an airport has got a different set of circumstances. So I think while we've heard a lot of opposition about our neighbors to the north, we've also heard from Madras, and there are other cities I know that have a very keen interest in what this bill potentially offers for them. So I think as the testimony has raised some good questions, and I think the last thing that the chair referenced was about, okay, you take the water to the airport, but then what? Because the airport has runways and some other infrastructure. The commercial and industrial entities and properties there are often private. So how are you going to deal with the water? That is a very doable thing. Again, and that would put the city in control of that decision of how that water is going to go, how the infrastructure is going to get to them. Because you're not going to give it to the airport and say, okay, you dispense our water. Cities don't turn over the ability to provide water services to other entities very often for obvious reasons. So, again, I think it's a win-win bill, and I urge your support of a due pass recommendation.
Now, were you following, I can't recall if you were here or not, when I read the letter from LC that seems to make it clear that one option not on the table for the city under this bill is to require annexation in exchange for the services. The sponsor and the commissioner both thought it did and wanted to establish that they believe it did, but we probably would have to make sure that that is locked down if there's no disagreement among anybody about the fact that that is something the city should be able to include into their conditions.
Chair Clem, I don't know that I necessarily agree with LC's thoughts to you. Obviously, in the normal system, you would go through an annexation process in order to provide those services, or if you're the applicant, in order to receive those services. In the case at hand, in this bill, it very well could be the case is that the land between the airport and the city prohibits that annexation. And we talked about cherry stem annexations. Mm-hmm. They're almost impossible. So for many, this would not be.
Why is that? Because I thought only Nike and ESI were protected from them. I thought everybody was at risk.
No, our perfect example is years ago, we had a property out at in the industrial area at the airport that wanted to expand. Mm-hmm. we were totally in support of that. But because the property, the last city property, was not contiguous to this, we could not annex it, and the county wouldn't go along with it. So, which would make it a cherry stem annexation. So you have to be contiguous.
But I think what they typically do is they annex the road all the way right up next to it.
And they said, no, that's not sufficient. You have to have a property other than the road, because that was the concept that Silverton was going to use. But with respect to the bill and what Elsie said, so if the city says, no, we do not want to participate or use this bill as that means. However, if and when you decide either your property is annexed or you request annexation, then we'll have something to talk about. As I see this, it's just an opportunity to bring some expediency to getting needed services to an airport. And it may be because to go through the full land use process is a whole other thing.
I think that's true. Like in Madras's case, they have this company that, you know, maybe is waiting to see whether they're going to get services. So they would like to do it as quickly as possible so they can say, yeah, we are going to run services out there. They want to eventually annex, but not now, because annexation is going to require moving their UGB as well. And they're not going to be able to convince LCDC to allow them to do that tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so they want a tool where they still could have a non-remonstrance agreement as part of the agreement. So they'll say, fine. I mean, they own both in this in Madras. They own the airport and they're the one extending the services. So they'd make an agreement with themselves to run the services out now with a eventual consent to annex.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would avoid having to go through the exceptions process and instead use this bill. Which I frankly see some logic in that, because it's a, you know, it's a situation where, yeah, we'll have Doug talk. It's a situation where I do think airports were put outside UGBs probably for a reason in Eugene and some other cases, because they didn't want to deal with all the neighbors complaining, like the gentleman who lives 2 miles from one and has to listen to it all night, and my constituents who live right on the other side of 22 call me complaining about any time there's a discussion of a new business coming to the airport, they get upset. So I get that part, and I'm not 100% sure if the exceptions process works quite as smoothly as people say it does, especially if there's multiple parties on what's known as the airport, and they'd all have to take an exception. Doug, did you want to?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at the risk of belaboring this very long and interesting discussion, I wanted to make a couple quick points, and your last point is one of them. First of all, I want to thank Ken Hector for getting us back on track. I really think this is a simple bill.
Tell us who you are.
I'm Doug Riggs. Sorry. On behalf of the Central Oregon Cities Organization. Madras is one of my 9 cities. My cities would never be supporting a bill which allowed some entity outside the city to mandate connection with sewer or water. And so the specific provisions in the bill which have been pointed to, which basically require city agreement, I think are very important. The second is the exceptions process, and Madras looked into this extensively. We talked to LCDC about it and talked to staff and DLCD staff, and we've looked at the history of exceptions, and they're, you know, like anything that is a land use process in Oregon, it is not an expedited process. It takes time, it takes energy, it takes a lot of people being at the table. And in many cases, it would take far too long to get the exception. The other experience with Madras, and the city manager testified to this a little bit, you have to prove that there's the only option would be to provide sewer to this area, and that would be the only option for disposing of the waste that would come out of this area. And in this case, we have the opportunity for septic, so there was quite a bit of doubt about whether or not, even if we went through the exceptions process, we would get the exception at the end of the day. So we think that, you know, certainly an exceptions process does exist, but it would take months or years. It does not meet the needs for economic development. The annexation issue is also a big one. We can't convince the LCDC in any timely manner to allow us to annex well over 100 acres, and so creating a very specific...
Because you'd have to move your UGB first.
Absolutely, right. Yeah. Right. So coming up with a very specific exception through this bill makes an awful lot more sense to us.
And do you think they also want the ability to put into an agreement a non-remonstrance agreement for the future?
Well, in our case, you have to remember that the airport is owned and operated by the city.
Right.
And it is within our goal of annexing at some future point. We saw in the city of Bend back when they had Juniper Ridge back in 2002, 2003, and it was a 1,700-acre parcel of property that they wanted to annex completely so they could master plan it. And they went through a five-year process and were not able to annex that entire area, so they couldn't even master plan. Same thing would be true of the Mattis Airport. It's 1,700 acres. Part of it is already annexed into the city, and part of it is not, and going through that process would just simply take too long.
But I'm talking about a future, a non-remonstrance agreement that they would say in exchange for the services, we won't contest annexation. That way they could use, like, triple majority annexation or some other ones.
Well, in our case, I think it's a little bit different because the city is in charge of the airport, so
might not need a non-remonstrance agreement. Versus a landowner that might try and fight eventual annexation after getting the freebie.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have an objection to having an allowance to be able to require a non-remonstrance agreement, would they?
I don't think so. I think my main concern is that this discussion today has complicated the issue to the point that I'd worry that we get anything out of this building in a timely fashion. And, you know, the Aurora situation is a little bit unique, and I would hate to pass a bill that doesn't help a lot of the other areas in the state that might be able to benefit from something that makes sense like this to me.
Well, we definitely have time, but it's, I can largely assure anybody listening the bill's not going to move without an amendment. So there's going to be a concurrence vote no matter what. The question is what's in the amendment. Any questions for this group? Okay. Great, thank you. I need to carry over the bakery bill because they all left, I think, not thinking I would ever get back to them, which is probably true. Oh, we're just going to reschedule. I'll just tell people we're going to reschedule for the 19th because we have a special meeting on the 14th for the State of the Tribes, where a lot of our recognized tribes are going to talk about that. So we'll reschedule this for the 19th. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 534 and adjourn the committee.
You don't have to carry over this.